Africa, rise and shine. Africa, zora. Africa, amka na unare.
Good morning and a very warm welcome to Africa Rise and Shine. This is the final hour for this morning on Channel Africa from an African perspective, coming to you live from Johannesburg in South Africa. We're on DSTV's audio bouquet channel 802 and on www.channelafrica.co.za. I'm Lulu Gabu, in studio with Nosihle Zuma and Thabiso Luhoko. In our top stories on Africa Rise and Shine at this hour: Ethiopia denounces what it terms as a belligerent threat towards resolving an ongoing dispute with its neighbors over the sharing of the River Nile waters. October is recognized as Eye Care Awareness Month, aimed at raising awareness about the importance of eye health, specifically around the prevention and treatment of avoidable blindness. And in economics news, a group of Zambian women and children file a class action lawsuit against a subsidiary of the mining company Anglo American for alleged mass lead poisoning. But first up, the news with Nosihle Zuma.
SABC News, independent and impartial.
From an African perspective.
Thank you, Lulu. Good morning. The number of coronavirus cases has topped 715,000 in South Africa. The health department says that another 1,622 people have tested positive for the virus, bringing the cumulative number of infections to 715,868. Another 24 people have died from COVID-19, taking the national death toll to 18,968. The number of recoveries now stands at 646,170. The opposition MDC in Zimbabwe has accused the Zimbabwean government of using the targeted sanctions issued to conceal bad governance. The ruling ZANU-PF has been calling for the removal of targeted sanctions imposed by the West over alleged human rights abuses and election rigging. MDC spokesperson Fadzayi Mahere.
Sanctions are just a propaganda tool that's being used by this regime to excuse the bad governance and corruption crisis that we see in Zimbabwe. If you look at how this government has conducted itself, if you look at the human rights abuses, if you look at the abductions, if you look at all the corruption scandals, you see that it's not sanctions that are responsible for Zimbabwe's crisis. It's bad governance that is at the root of Zimbabwe's suffering.
South Africa has welcomed the entry into force of the Treaty on the Prohibition of Nuclear Weapons after the 50th instrument of ratification was deposited by Honduras. The treaty, also known as the Nuclear Ban Treaty, is set to enter into force on January the 22nd next year. The international legal framework, which is binding, requires all states that ratify it to not develop or stockpile nuclear weapons or other nuclear explosive devices. South Africa deposited its instrument in February last year. The country's ambassador to Geneva, Nozipho Mtlakatu-Diseko.
I'm really, really satisfied. Honduras deposited its instrument on the 75th anniversary of the United Nations, the 75th anniversary of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. You know, when the UN was established, the first resolution it passed, the first, Res 1, was on nuclear disarmament to address problems arising from the discovery of nuclear energy, as it were, or the splitting of the atom. We are delighted that there is now a norm that is established with respect to nuclear weapons, which completes the cycle in relation to weapons of mass destruction. Up until now, nuclear weapons were not covered by any international norm in terms of prohibition.
The social media platform Facebook is reported to be preparing a range of emergency measures in case of conflict related to the U.S. election. This includes slowing the spread of viral content and lowering the bar for suppressing potentially inflammatory posts. The BBC's Lebo Diseko has more.
The Wall Street Journal reports that Facebook is considering measures that have been used in countries such as Sri Lanka and Myanmar. These include slowing the spread of posts as they start to go viral and changing the type of content that people see in their feeds. Republicans have long accused both Facebook and Twitter of censorship, most recently after both companies limited the spread of a story containing unverified claims about Joe Biden's son Hunter. The CEOs of both companies will be questioned by senators about that after the election.
And Victoria, the Australian state hardest hit by the coronavirus, has not registered a single new infection over the past 24 hours. Australia has recorded more than 24,000 cases of the virus and 900 COVID-19 related deaths. The BBC's Shamia Khalil has more.
The state capital, Melbourne, entered its current lockdown in early July as COVID-19 cases surged to over 700 a day. But strict stay-at-home rules and a curfew have reduced the numbers significantly. On Sunday, Victoria's Premier Daniel Andrews delayed announcing opening dates for the retail and hospitality sectors, pending the outcome of tests connected to an outbreak in Melbourne's northern suburbs. The timeline for easing restrictions has changed more than once and has caused frustration among many residents and business owners.
Your sports news with Figi Lilingwati.
In our sports update this hour, we begin with football news. Defender Issofou Dayo scored his first goal since September last year in the 2019-2020 CAF Confederations Cup to give Renaissance Bekane of Morocco a 1-0 win over Pyramids of Egypt in Sunday's final. His only previous effort came at home to Ashanti Gold of Ghana in a round of 32 second leg, and the final was delayed 5 months because of the coronavirus pandemic. Beaten in the final of the secondary African club competition last season by Zamalek of Egypt, Bekane made no mistake at the second attempt and should have won more convincingly in Rabat. Bekane are the fifth Moroccan club after FAR Rabat, Fus Rabat and Mokhreb Fes and Raja Casablanca to win the African equivalent of the UEFA Europa League. Bekane will defend the trophy next season, while Pyramids go into the CAF Champions League or Confederations Cup, depending on whether they finish second or third in the Egyptian Premier League. On to cricket news. Cricket South Africa, CSA, has announced the resignation of the acting president, Beresford Williams, and four other board members. Williams is joined by the president of the Northlands Cricket Union, Tebogo Siko, president of Boland Cricket Union, Angelo Carlson, deputy president of Limpopo Impala Cricket, John Mukhudi, and president of the Eastern Province Cricket Union, Donovan May. The new acting president of the Members' Council, Rihan Richard, says the resignations were handed in at the meeting of the Members' Council held at the weekend. Richard says Williams has resigned both from the board and the Members' Council, while others had resigned as board members but would remain on the Members' Council. 2 days ago, independent director Devin Damalingan also handed his resignation. And finally, motor racing, Lewis Hamilton says he is in dreamland after powering to victory in the Portuguese Grand Prix to become Formula One's record all-time race winner. His 92nd win lifted him one clear of seven-time world champion Michael Schumacher's 16-year-old record of 91 wins and opened up a 77-point lead ahead of Mercedes teammate Valtteri Bottas, who finished second in the title race. With 5 races remaining in the coronavirus-affected season, Hamilton is within reach of a record-equaling 7th championship and a record-increasing 100th pole position. That's your sport news this hour.
Thank you, Figile, for that sports update. It is 7:09 Central African time, and you're listening to Africa Rise and Shine. Ethiopia has denounced what it termed as belligerent threats towards resolving an ongoing dispute with its neighbors over the sharing of the River Nile waters. This follows the start of the filling and the operation of its Grand Renaissance Dam. Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed's office termed the threats as misguided, unproductive and clear violations of international law. The statement came hours after U.S. President Donald Trump suggested that Cairo would eventually blow up the dam if the deadlock was not resolved. Sarah Kimani reports.
On Friday, Trump called for a resolution to the standoff over the Grand Ethiopian Renaissance Dam, otherwise known as the GERD, during a phone call with Sudanese Prime Minister Abdallah Hamdok, warning that Egypt would end up blowing up the dam.
And it's a very dangerous situation because Egypt is not going to be able to live that way. And they'll end up blowing up the dam. And I said it, and I say it loud and clear, they'll blow up that dam. And they have to...
Ethiopia, Sudan, and Egypt have been locked in a bitter dispute over the filling and operation of the GERD, which remains unresolved, although the reservoir behind the dam began filling in July this year. While Egypt relies on the Nile for 90% of its domestic water use, Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed says 85% of the Nile waters originate from Ethiopia. In reaction to the statement, the European Union threw its weight behind the African Union-led negotiations under the chairmanship of South Africa's President Cyril Ramaphosa. Ethiopia has in the meantime summoned the U.S. ambassador to the country to seek clarification on the remarks made by Trump. Sarah Kimani, Kenya.
There is a general feeling by several scholars and ordinary people in Zimbabwe that sanctions imposed on the ruling elite by the US, UK and EU countries are no longer producing the intended results. This came out over the weekend as the country, together with neighbors in the region, commemorated the first anniversary of the anti-sanctions day as promulgated by SADC leaders last year. While some still maintain government has to implement political and economic reforms, analysts say this has presented an opportunity for ZANU-PF to fight back instead of resolving human rights abuses. Simon Muchema reports from Harare.
There are mixed reactions by the Zimbabweans over the call by the Southern Africa Development Community, SADC, for the targeted sanctions against the ruling elite to be lifted. There is a conviction by some citizens sanctions are necessary to compel Zimbabwe to reform its economy and politics, while some scholars say they are no longer producing their intended results. Instead of hurting targeted companies and individuals and stop government from looting, plug corruption and human rights abuses, sanctions are now being used as a political tool. This was revealed over the weekend as the region commemorated the first anniversary of the anti-sanctions day on the 25th of October following the promulgation by SADC last year. In Zimbabwe, it was jingle after jingle from Friday to Sunday as the country commemorated anti-sanction day. Government used national television and various radio stations to preach the sanctions gospel, forcing the USA, UK and the EU to counter on social media. A PhD candidate and political analyst, Alexander Rosero, described how sanctions have been used as propaganda.
You would realize that the regional blocs such as SADC, such as AU, have actually rallied in support of ZANU-PF, calling for the removal of sanctions, not necessarily because they approve of the governance or infrastructure in ZANU-PF, where there is rampant human rights abuses, corruption, moral decay, amongst several other social evils bedeviling the Southern African state. But you must also realize that an attack to Zimbabwe from a regional solidarity point of view is an attack to SADC, is an attack to the AU. So in this respect, in this framing, sanctions have actually been helpful to ZANU-PF more than they have been helpful to those who imposed sanctions on Zimbabwe in the first place. I think time has come for the US and the UK to reconsider the issue of sanctions regime.
Nelson Chamisa, leader of the Opposition Movement for Democratic Change, MDC Alliance, also complained government was using the sanctions to divert attention of Zimbabweans from its failure to deliver promises to improve lives. With the opposition divided following a Supreme Court judgment in March, Chamisa's voice is no longer as loud as it should be. Various opposition leaders aligned to Chamisa castigated the anti-sanctions gospel on social media too. However, while all this was happening, SADC leaders outtweeted each other and sent solidarity messages which were broadcast on national television. President Emmerson Mnangagwa appeared on national television every day from Friday with different anti-sanctions messages, and this is what he kept saying. On behalf of the entire SADC, Executive Secretary Dr. Stegomena Lawrence Tex posted a message regarding the first anti-sanctions anniversary. In Harare, Zimbabwe, this is Simon Mchemwa.
Across the globe, every second, there's always a breaking story.
Kolitranjoy for Channel Africa Radio in Ethiopia's capital, Addis Ababa.
Reporting for Channel Africa, I am Hilda Kekeloa in Zambia.
Our cutting-edge and hard-hitting journalism leaves no stone unturned, giving you the whole picture every time.
George Muhango, Channel Africa, Blantyre.
Reporting for Channel Africa, this is Moki Kinzeka in Yaoundé.
From an African perspective, listen to Channel Africa in English, Kiswahili, French, Silozi, Portuguese, and Chinyanja, informing the world about Africa.
Join us every day and know what is happening around you.
Channel Africa.
I am an African. I owe my being to the hills and the valleys, the mountains and the glades, the rivers, the deserts, the trees, the flowers, the seas, and the ever-changing seasons that define the face of our native land.
Masterclass Africa, where great minds connect. An explorative one-on-one talk show that seeks to tackle issues of leadership and consciousness on the African continent and around the world. Masterclass comes to you every Fridays, 8 o'clock to 9 o'clock Central African Time. Channel Africa, bringing you the African perspective.
It's 7:19 Central African time and you're listening to Africa Rise and Shine. October is recognized as Eye Care Awareness Month. The campaign aims to raise awareness about the importance of eye health, specifically around the prevention and treatment of avoidable blindness. The Mother and Child Academic Hospital Foundation in South Africa is using this opportunity to promote what is called Make the First 1,000 Days Count initiative. Among other things, the initiative highlights the importance of checking that the baby's senses are operating at optimal capacity, including their eyesight. The foundation's founder, director, Professor André Venter.
For me, vision is a critical sense in a child's development. So we don't always understand that to see things, of course, means that you understand them, you can touch them, you can go to them. Not seeing things means that it's very difficult to learn things and to understand things, but it's far more than that. A lot of what we do in life is by copying other people. I mean, we don't learn to chew as babies. We only see people chew and then we learn to chew. We don't know how social interaction happens unless we see it. We don't know how people move until we see it. So being able to see affects every part of your development as a child. So as a child developmentalist, for me, vision is crucial.
Now, why is this particularly important for babies and children, Prof?
Well, I think, as I've mentioned, for babies, it is critical for their development. And for children, it is critical for their educational development.
Let's talk about the factors that contribute to infant blindness and what can expectant mothers do to also ensure, you know, healthy eyesight for their unborn baby, if there is anything that they can do at that stage in any case.
Well, I think there's two important things for the unborn baby. The first one is to try not to have premature babies. I mean, I know that's not the mother's fault. But one has to look after the babies. One has to have good antenatal care, because I think one of the biggest causes of blindness or visual impairment is babies that are born prematurely, especially if they're on ventilators often. This is a big problem. The other problem is the mothers must be healthy. We know that there's lots of infections that mothers can get that affects the eyes directly, like German measles, toxoplasmosis, cytomegalovirus. There's a whole lot of them. I think those are two big keys. And then the third one is the mother's nutrition, of course, to make sure that all the building blocks are there for the child's central nervous system to develop well.
So everything works together. Now, let's talk a bit, I mean, for the benefit of our listeners, there's a lot of myths, Prof, related to cleaning a baby's eyes. And what is, in fact, the correct way of doing it? And let's talk about some of those myths.
Well, I'm not so very much aware of myths. I think maybe I see the babies a bit later in my life, so I don't actually know the issues around this. But I know there are people that use Vaseline and all sorts of things in the eyes, which is not a good idea. In fact, just lukewarm water is by far the best thing to clean the baby's eyes, or otherwise saline, if people know what that is. That's a salt solution. There are some people who claim that breast milk is a good thing to use. I have not personal experience, but there has been proponents of that. Mm-hmm. But I think if the eyes are red and it looks infected, and it's not just, you know, sticky from tears, but sticky from pus, nobody should be cleaning the eyes. They should be seeing a doctor immediately, because that's actually an emergency in a baby. It can be very, very devastating if not treated properly.
Sure. Now, let's talk a bit more about the Make the First 1,000 Days Count campaign. I mean, tell us all about it and how the public can also get involved around this campaign.
Well, just in a nutshell, the 1,000 Days is a universal campaign that says the first 1,000 days of a child's life is critical for his future. So the first 1,000 days includes the time from conception till birth, and then from birth to the first birthday, and from the first birthday to the second birthday. And if those are all exactly as they should be, it counts up to 1,000 days. So the campaign really says you must have the best pregnancy you can have, you must have the best delivery you can have, and once the baby is born, the baby should have the best care he can have, with the best development and nutrition and immunizations that he can have, so that he can grow up in the first 1,000 days to be the best he can be at 2 years. And that is a predictor for life.
In terms of adults taking care of their eye health, you know, what are some of the best practices there?
You know what is one of the most, the two biggest causes for eye problems in adults, mm-hmm. besides having diseases of your eye, of course, which you can't always prevent, is trauma to the eye.
Mm-hmm.
So people that keep their eyes at risk and not wear protective glasses or, you know, run with things in their hands and they hurt their eyes. Trauma is very high on the list. And the second one is nutrition. We know that vitamin A deficiency has a direct effect on the vision of the eye. Of course, there's lots of other things, and there's genetic conditions, and there's glaucoma and so on. But protect your eyes, I think, must make sure that you don't traumatize them.
And finally, Prof, for people who'd love to reach out and find out a little bit more about the foundation and get involved with some of the efforts that you're putting in this month, how do they do that?
Everything is available on our website. It is the MACA Foundation, capital A-M-A-C-A-H, MACA, M-A-C-A-H, Foundation.
That was Professor André Venter, one of the founder directors of the Mother and Child Academic Hospital Foundation in South Africa, speaking to Zikonamiso. The Premier of South Africa's coastal province of KwaZulu-Natal, Sihle Zikalala, has warned that the provincial government and law enforcement agencies will crack down on those flouting COVID-19 regulations to fend off a second wave of infections. The number of new cases has increased in 9 of the province's 12 districts in the past 2 weeks. The provincial government is also working on a comprehensive contingency plan for the influx of holiday goers over the festive season. Dries Libbenberg reports.
Premier Sihle Zikalala says over the past week there were 964 new COVID-19 infections in the province, compared to 756 new cases the previous week. In this time, 186 people died of COVID-19. He has issued a stern warning that a second wave of COVID-19 infections will be devastating.
It seems that some people have thrown all caution to the wind and gone back to their old ways. Gone are the mask and sanitizing of hands, as well as adhering to social distancing. In many instances, if you didn't know, you would swear there was no COVID-19 around.
He says there will be a clampdown on restaurants and liquor outlets who do not ensure that patrons adhere to COVID-19 preventions. He says that liquor license inspectors will be out in full force.
In fact, we want to warn those posting pictures of themselves without wearing masks in liquor outlets. They are going to face the music themselves and the owners of those establishments.
KwaZulu-Natal Health MEC, Nomagugu Somalane Zulu, says provincial government is working on a holistic plan to prepare for an influx of holiday makers at the end of the year, while still safeguarding against an increase in COVID-19 cases. She says preparations include talks with the owners of hotels and places of entertainment.
Because we are very much aware that you are going to have people that are going to be coming outside the province that might not have tested and that will have to be tested. So we do have a plan in place when our visitors come to the province, when their visitors are in our places of entertainment, we must be able to adhere to the regulations. And if we are able to do that, then we'll be able to manage the spread of the virus.
With the start of the final matric examinations less than 2 weeks away, Education MEC Kwazi Mshengu believes that matrics have been able to make up for study time lost during the hard lockdown, while also making time for revision. He says most schools in the province have been teaching matrics 7 days a week in the run-up to the exams. And he says this year's matric class is confident going into the exams.
But others have really been quite motivated by the fact that they want to go down in history as a class that defeated COVID-19 before the other people could defeat it. And in our view, they have defeated COVID-19 by soldiering on until exam time. And the confidence that they have is really what is motivating us, but also the rest of their peers.
more than 220,000 learners will sit for matric exams in the province this year. This includes full-time learners, those writing supplementary exams, and people who wrote some of the subjects last year. I'm Dries Diebenberg in Durban.
The leader of the ECG Church, Shepherd Bushiri, his wife Mary, and Landiwe Ntlokwana will remain behind bars at South Africa's Khosi Mamburu Maximum Prison in Pretoria after their bail application in the Pretoria Magistrates Court was remanded to later today. We will come back to that story after the headlines with Nosihle Zuma.
SABC News, independent and impartial.
From an African perspective.
The number of coronavirus cases has topped 715,000 in South Africa. Security officials say Iraqi security forces clashed with anti-government demonstrators in Baghdad on Sunday, with at least 39 people injured. And the opposition MDC in Zimbabwe has accused the Zimbabwean government of using the targeted sanction issue to conceal bad governance. I'll be back with your full bulletin at 8.
SABC News, independent and impartial.
From an African perspective.
And coming back to the story of the leader of the ECG Church, Shepherd Bushiri, his wife Mary and Landiwe Ntlokwana will remain behind bars at South Africa's Khosi Mamburu Maximum Prison in Pretoria after their bail application in the Pretoria Magistrates Court was remanded to later today. They will then appear in court with the other accused in the same matter, Willa and Zetu Mudolo. The group is charged with fraud, money laundering and contravention of the Prevention of Organized Crime Act to the tune of over 100 million rand. Lila Magnus reports.
The leader of the Evangelical Christian Gatherings Church, Shepherd Bushiri, his wife Mary, and their co-accused Landiwe Ntlokwana started with their formal bail application on Friday afternoon. Their advocate, Annelien van den Heever, read out the affidavits in court. Bushiri says in his affidavit he does not have any reason to try and evade the trial because he is convinced he will be acquitted. He says he is being prejudiced by being incarcerated as he is no threat to the state or the public.
I fail to appreciate why I could be a flight risk. I have no reason to run away. I have no reason to evade the trial, as I know I have not committed any offence, let alone an offence for which I should be imprisoned. Sub 4, some immediate family members are resident in South Africa and we are a very close-knit family. Point 8, I'm a very religious person and live my life according to the strict principles of my religion. I am the pastor of the Enlightened Christian Gathering, the church, with a following in South Africa of about 2.1 million members.
His wife Mary told the court she has shown she can adhere to bail conditions as she is already out on bail in another matter.
My children are very young and it's cruel to deprive them of the company of their mother in circumstances where I do not understand the charges against me and why I was arrested in the circumstances where my legal team made arrangements to surrender me voluntarily. Demonstrated by previous conduct, I now for a prolonged period of time adhere to bail conditions imposed to me by the court in the pending matter.
The couple told the court they earn more than 700,000 rand per month from their respective businesses. Ntlokwana, an independent financial consultant, also said in her affidavit that she will not try to evade the trial as she did nothing wrong. She became involved with the church after suffering from depression.
About the beginning of 27, up until around December of 2018, I fell into a deep depression because of the stress associated with start-up business. I spent almost all my time volunteering at the Enlightened Christian Gathering Church. 32, I often organize and arrange events for the Enlightened Christian Gathering Church, which the church compensates me with gratuities.
The bail hearing was remanded to Monday, but Magistrate Tandi Teledi warned that there is no guarantee that it will proceed as the court roll is very full and they have to wait their turn. Bushiri and his co-accused will on Monday appear together with the other accused in the case, Villa and Zetu Mudolo. The Mudolo couple was arrested a day before Bushiri. The NPA has not released details of the latest allegations against Bushiri, but it is believed the charges relate to an investment scheme in which Bushiri told the church's congregants that they could earn a 50% profit within 30 days if they joined a commodity investment opportunity with the minimum investment starting at 100,000 rand. Some of the people allegedly never saw a cent of the money again. Scores of supporters of Bushiri gathered outside the court building, singing and praying for the man they call their prophet. I am Lila Magnus in Pretoria.
Tens of thousands of people in Uganda and Tanzania have been hurt by human rights violations linked to the French oil giant Total's operations in Uganda. This is according to two environmental organizations, Friends of the Earth and Survival International. The groups are seeking a court order requiring the company to disclose how it is addressing the alleged adverse impact of its activities, citing an obligation to do so under French law. The organizations, along with Ugandan activists, have alleged that Total intimidated and failed to properly compensate local landowners affected by work on its Tilenga project in Uganda and said environmental safeguards were insufficient. For more on the Tilenga project and how it has affected local communities, Channel Africa spoke to Dickens Kamugisha, Ugandan activist and chief executive officer of Africa Institute for Energy Governance.
Of course, as our organization, Africa Institute for Energy Governance, has been following all the processes where companies and the government have been trying to especially acquire land from the community. And the projects, especially by Total, the Tilenga project and the East African crude oil pipeline, have affected over 100,000 people. Most of those people have been stopped from using their land, even before compensation. Most of those people have been displaced. They are no longer living in the right places. And we are saying that, you know, we have a constitution. We have other rules governing land and property rights. And we've been saying the government and the oil companies must respect those laws, respect the rights of those communities. We engaged and prepared the communities to participate in the environmental and social impact assessments that have been conducted by NEMA, by Total, and approved by the National Environmental Management Authority. And in those assessments, it was very, very clear that laws were not followed, especially relating to community participation. Laws were not followed in the areas where the resettlement action plan reports, which are supposed to guide on how people are compensated. The resettlement action plan reports were implemented even before approval by the government, which is wrong in law and in practice. So as a result of these violations and challenges in the community, we filed cases in court. First, we filed a case in 2019 challenging the approval of the environmental and social impact assessment of the Tilenga project.
Why do you think the Ugandan Environmental Management Authority has approved this project, even though there are concerns around the environmental and social impact assessment procedure?
Of course, we know very well that, you know, these projects are huge projects where the president is very much interested. We know companies like Total is a huge company, and we know the weaknesses of our institution. We know the corruption in this country, and there is no doubt whatsoever that the National Environmental Management Authority is knowledgeable, is skilled, but because of the political pressure, because of the corruption in this country, it is, we believe that's the reason why they are violating the laws, approved projects that have huge negative impact, environmental and social impact in this country.
But Total says it has carried out awareness campaigns to inform communities of their rights. How do you respond to this?
Of course, if you if the awareness campaigns that are being carried out by the companies and versus those that are being carried by the civil society organizations, you will discover that actually the companies, the awareness they do is basically to mislead, to hoodwink the communities. They never tell them that actually these are the impacts. Instead, they tell them, we are going to create jobs for you. We are going to make you rich. So it is a very, very, very misleading awareness that is being carried out there. And this is the reason why most of us civil society, when we try to go to the community, educate the people without bias, the government comes up with rules with the police and they say, you cannot continue working in the communities. Even when they have never brought any charges against us for going to the communities, but we know they only want the companies to be there and promise people what they will never deliver. They don't want the other position where you tell people these are the realities. This is a case where in Africa we've never seen any country really producing oil and community rights, environmental rights are respected.
And just in terms of the compensation issue, Total has come out to say that the compensation payments have been delayed because of the coronavirus pandemic, adding that the project was suspended in September, causing delays, and that it is currently discussing an interim payment system with the Ugandan authorities. What can you tell us in terms of where things are with regards to compensation?
Of course, it is very, very shameful of both the company and the government to claim that it is COVID that has caused the problems with compensation, because the COVID did not come here to amend our constitution. Our constitution remains very, very clear that for anyone to lose his or her property, you must first compensate that person fairly and adequately. But the unfortunate thing is that even before coronavirus, the company and the government had already stopped most of the communities from using their land, especially for perennial crops. And so it is just a mere excuse that, you know, the suspension of activities, the coronavirus, the one that made the delay. And of course, you know, even in some of other projects that are not run by Total, but which are run by government, where they want to build the refinery and they acquired over 29 square kilometers of land for the oil refinery.
That's Dickens Kamugisha, Ugandan activist and chief executive officer of Africa Institute for Energy Governance, speaking to Kumbele Mungelele.
WHO recommends 30 minutes of physical activity a day for adults and 1 hour a day for children. If your local or national guidelines allow it, go outside for a walk, a run or a ride, and keep a safe distance from others. If you can't leave the house, find an exercise video online. Dance to music, do some yoga, or walk up and down the stairs.
Avoid touching your eyes, nose and mouth to slow the spread of the coronavirus. For more information on the coronavirus, visit the World Health Organization site at www.who.int.
In each and every one of us, there is a purpose engraved.
We were all meant to shine.
It is up to an individual to realize that purpose.
Don't ever let somebody tell you you can't do something.
Join me, Amanda Machaga, on Life by Design, where I will be talking to people who share their journey on how they discovered their purpose with the hope to inspire you to live your life by design. Tune in to Life by Design for your dose of Monday motivation every Monday at 8 a.m. Central African Time and at 2 a.m. the following day. Life by Design, be the architect of your life. Only on Channel Africa, Be African Perspective.
It's 7:43 Central African time and you're listening to Africa Rise and Shine, coming to you live from Johannesburg in South Africa. A newly crowned Miss South Africa, Shudufa Dzomusida, says the country needs to develop an army of empowered women as just one more step to fight gender-based violence. She says she hopes to be a representative of the beauty, resilience and diversity that she says exists in this country. The 24-year-old beauty from Limpopo and the runners-up faced the media in Cape Town. Tandiswa Mau reports.
Musida says during her reign, her campaign will focus on mental health as one of the least talked about health conditions. She says one in three people are expected to suffer mental illness in their lifetime, but only one in ten will actually access medical health. Musida says it is her experience that mental illness is spoken about as a shame. She says during her reign, she hopes to help confront stereotypes in what she says is a fight inspired by personal experiences.
For me personally, mental health is something that's not really spoken about. It's considered a taboo conversation that is often engaged with, not to rehabilitate, but rather to shame. Mm-hmm. So actually bringing that conversation forward and saying, listen, it's time. Our society needs help. Mm. Our society needs to stand together to actually confront this, to tackle this, so we can move forward. Because if the mind is conquered, we'll go nowhere.
She has paid tribute to her predecessor, Zosbini Tunzi, whom she says has paved the way for people like her to present the natural self. She wears a short shaven hairstyle.
She opened a door and I just walked through it. Mm. And that's the reason I'm sitting here today. Mm. I think representation is important because growing up, I never saw a girl like me or Zosie on TV. Mm. Now I'm sitting here. Now she sat here before me. Mm. And it's important for the next little girl to see it as well. Mm.
She holds a Bachelor of Social Sciences in Philosophy, Politics and Economics from the University of Pretoria and is currently studying towards her BA honours in International Relations at the University of Witwatersrand. The first and second runners are Patato Mosele and Natasha Yube. I'm Thandiswa Mau in Cape Town.
MEC for Health in South Africa's Mpumalanga province, Sasegani Manzini, has launched malaria indoor residual spraying season to mitigate the transmission of the mosquito-borne infectious disease in Masoyi near Hazyview. Through the program, sprayers will visit different malaria-prone communities to spray households. Eric Lubisi filed this report.
Mpumalanga is one of the provinces that are endemic to malaria, especially the Eswatini region. During summer season, Nkomazi, which is situated on the border with Eswatini and Mozambique, Mbombela and Bushbuckridge, are the most malaria risk areas. Funani Matlala lives in Numbi, situated closer to the Kruger National Park, another high risk area. Her house was also sprayed. I am grateful that my house is being sprayed for malaria. Mosquitoes are a serious problem in this area. I will now be safe with my grandchildren. Humana People to People is an organization stationed on the borders with neighboring countries, Mozambique and Eswatini. Kingdom Chipupuroro is from the organization Humana People to People.
We are doing testing and treating of migrant populations and the underserved communities. So we are getting an overwhelming response. The people are testing and the people are treating. So in the CABA against malaria, the key important thing is to track, test and treat. And that's what we are actually doing along the borders to block infections into the country from the high endemic areas.
Dr. Charles Mugera from the World Health Organization says malaria can be devastating if left unattended. According to Dr. Mugero, it is important to intensify efforts as the world is also battling another pandemic, COVID-19.
This time around, we are here. Our main reason for being in Mpumalanga is to support response to COVID-19. However, since the same people we are supporting or the same people we are looking at are also exposed to other problems. So we don't limit our service to COVID-19. You also support other areas.
Health MEC Sasekani Manzini says the interventions by government in curbing the transmissions of malaria are yielding positive results.
From 2017 financial year to now, we were at around 9,371, and now 2020-21 we are around 589 cases, of which is something that it shows that we are moving towards making sure that we have zero infection of malaria in the province. And also in terms of death, we can say that from 96 in 17-18, currently we've got only one death.
The provincial government signed a memorandum of understanding with Mozambique and Eswatini to mitigate the spread of malaria. I am Eric Lubisi in Bombela.
It's 7:49 Central African time, and our economics update up next with Thabiso Lehuku.
A very good morning. The High Court in Johannesburg, South Africa, is this morning expected to hear former Bosasa COO Angelo Agrizi's bail appeal for his fraud and corruption case. The Specialized Commercial Crimes Court, sitting in the Palm Ridge Magistrates Court, east of Johannesburg, turned down his bail application more than a week ago after the state argued that he was a flight risk. Agrizi is currently facing fraud and corruption charges dating back to when he was working for Bosasa, which is now trading as African Global Operations. But as Ntebu Mokobo reports, his bail appeal hearing will be held in absentia, as he is still in hospital.
Former Bosasa executive is fighting for his life in the intensive care unit at a private medical facility in Johannesburg. His health started to deteriorate after spending a night behind bars, and was later moved to a public hospital for further medical care. But last Wednesday, his condition worsened after having a heart attack. He's reportedly in a critical condition and placed on three different forms of life support. Angelo Agrizi's jail for allegedly making payments to former ANC MP Vincent Smith, who is now on a 30,000 rand bail for charges also relating to fraud and corruption. Ntebu Mokobo for SABC in Johannesburg.
The Broadcasting Electronic Media and Allied Workers Union of South Africa says it will serve the SABC with the court papers regarding the union's application to the Labour Court to challenge the public broadcaster's decision to proceed with retrenchments. The SABC missed Bemawu's Saturday deadline to respond to its letter requesting the public broadcaster to resume talks over the decision to retrench at least 600 permanent staff and not to renew the contracts of more than 1,000 freelancers as part of its turnaround strategy. The union's president, Hannes de Buisson.
If they're not going to respond to the letter, we are, as we speak, we are currently drafting papers which will be served on them tomorrow morning or during the day, and in that that will be an application in the Labour Court where we want to ask for an order for the SABC to not proceed to issue termination letters and to come back to the table to properly consult with labour unions and employees in terms of the Section 189 process.
The alcohol industry in South Africa has expressed support for law enforcement when it comes to businesses that do not comply with the COVID-19 protocols. The industry says it does not want a return of the ban on liquor sales during the hard lockdown, and businesses must therefore comply with government regulations. There are concerns that there could be a substantial second wave of coronavirus if people and businesses do not adhere to COVID-19 protocols. Liquor companies are also subject to regulations limiting trade to weekdays. SA Liquor Brand Owners Association Chairperson Sibani Mgadi.
Alcohol industry welcomes the effort of the South African police to investigate outlets that are not complying with the rules of trading hours, social distancing and wearing of masks. If such investigation leads to the review of licenses, we are fully committed to immediately stop servicing and supplying those outlets with products.
A group of Zambian women and children have filed a class action lawsuit against a subsidiary of the mining company Anglo American for alleged mass lead poisoning. The lawsuit claims that more than 100,000 people may have been poisoned over generations by exposure to toxins from a lead mine in Kabwe District. Anglo American South Africa was a shareholder in the mine from 1925 to 1974 when it was nationalized. The company says it will defend its position. Zimbabwe Stock Exchange listed a property firm, Zimbabwe Property Investments, has bemoaned the currency volatility, which has seen the company losing value through discounting US rentals, coupled with a deteriorating exchange rate in the first half of 2020. In its audited financial results for the half year ended the 30th of June, ZPI said investment properties were valued at $2.25 billion by independent valuers, representing a 75% increase in December 2019. However, in US dollar terms, the portfolio value declined. The US dollar is trading at a 377.79 Nigerian naira, 11.28 Botswana pula, 108.13 Kenyan shilling, and 20.28 Zambian kwacha. In BRICS currencies, we'll start in Brazil. One US dollar there costs 5.61 rubles, Russia 75.79 rubles. In India, 73.63 rupees. In China, a dollar is changing hands at 61.67. And in South Africa, it will cost you 16.18. The US dollar is also trading at 76 pence to the British pound and 84 cents to euro. A look at commodities markets now. Gold is trading at $1,900 and platinum at $912 per ounce, while Brent crude oil is at $42.35 a barrel. Africa, your favorite channel.
Africa, rise and shine. Africa, zola. Africa, amuka na unai.
That wraps up Africa Rise and Shine today. For myself, Lulu Gabu, producer Luanda Malme, technical producer Mario Edwards, and the rest of the team, thank you for joining us. For comments about our show, send us an email at info@channelafrica.co.za, WhatsApp on +277 6300 3327, or tweet us at Channel Africa 1. Now, taking us to the top of our hour for the news is Abenguni by Tandiswa Mazwai. Have a great day and keep safe.